This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Morena Wairapa, kia ora tātou, and welcome to our weekly program Energise Yourself on ROFM 92.7, a New Zealand On Air initiative. The purpose of this program is just to bring you and other local people who are involved in sport, recreation, health and well-being, and fitness and exercise, and everything in and around that. With the purpose to encourage listeners to get active, remembering that everybody can move something and that motion changes emotion. Our guest this morning is Rick Bryant. Rick has a really, really interesting background in health and wellness and exercise. I met Rick through the Carterton Community Garden. Morning, Rick.
Morning, Alex. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. So what are you up to these days?
A bit of everything at the moment. I do a little bit of mentoring for some young guys, and that we try to do stuff outside of the community as much as possible. I help with Special Olympics, and for those that don't know Special Olympics, that's where people with some sort of disability play sports. So I help a bit of coaching there, and just generally in community groups. I do a bit, I guess, primarily because my son has autism and epilepsy. He's now 15, and he unfortunately had seizures when he was 3.5, and that developed into an autistic situation for him,
which
we had no experience of at all.
Yeah,
and so we've had quite a challenging number of years kind of working our way through that. But anyway, that's how I guess I've always been involved in sports, and I've worked in health clubs and things all my life, but that's how I've kind of got more into the community part of it, by I guess trying to help some of these groups that just don't have often the support that they need or funding available. So it's very much a hands-on approach to those sorts of things.
Fantastic. And you mentioned funding. So is that a contentious issue for people with disabilities these days? I mean, more recently, there's been a lot of adverse publicity.
Yeah. So funding is. It should really be simple, but it's kind of complicated. The short version of funding is that historically, if your child had a disability, you would normally put your child into someone's care, for example, ID Services or NZ Care, and they would potentially live out their lives with that provider. There's been some changes going on for quite some years called Enabling Good Lives, where various governments, as I understand, have looked to move away from that model. And what they've tried to do is to give the family and the whānau more input and control into the lives of the person that they care for. So ultimately what that kind of means is in the Wairapa, funding goes through Focus, a group there where effectively if your child has an intellectual disability, you would talk to them and they would discuss kind of the needs of the child. And the idea is that they would put a funding package around that. So historically, your child would probably go into residential care and live their life in there, and you may visit them if you can type thing. The changes with Enabling Good Lives, which has been going on really a lot more prolifically in the last few years, is the ability to effectively take the funding package in a monetary value and then employ people directly for your child's needs or your person's needs. Yeah. So, and that's a double-edged sword, unfortunately, because the great thing about it is means, yes, you now have control over how you spend the money. And, I believe you can be far more efficient with your own money than having your child in a large, residential organisation.
Yeah.
The downside of that is that you have to then be able to employ people, because effectively you're employing the people that work with your family. So what I've tried to do as much as possible, and some of the groups we're involved with, is try to help people understand how this works and also empower them to make these decisions, because a lot of people are quite keen to be able to control their funding, but they've never employed anyone in their life.
Yes,
And that's quite a frightening...
Brings issues, yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
So I've always employed people. That's part of the job I've done. So I don't really have a problem with living in that world. But for a lot of people, you know, if you give the average person some money and ask them to interview someone and give them a contract and manage them, that's really quite scary.
Yeah.
So in terms of broad funding, that's how it works for individuals. In terms of funding, I also work for a charity called Digital Seniors here in the Wairarapa.
Oh, yes, and yes.
We
yes.
provide assistance with people with digital devices. So ultimately, if you have a phone or a laptop and you struggle, you can come to any of our drop-in opportunities, and there are all the libraries,
yes,
primarily
yes, yes.
Featherstone's, Greytown, Martinborough and Carlton, and we run two hubs in Masterton. So through that process, Digital Seniors have funding for what they do, and some of the charities that I work for also have funding, and certainly in the last year or so, because of the economy, funding in that respect has become much tighter. So
yeah.
Where you would apply for grants for your community group to try to support that, there's been considerable increase in the number of people applying and a decrease in the overall funding available.
Yeah.
So funding is quite complex in that you have, for disability, you have this individualised type funding, which potentially is something you can use for your immediate whānau environment. And then the charity funding, where all these groups in the Wairarapa also help support, they primarily rely on lotto funding
yes.
or trust funding, and
yes.
you apply for these funding. So ultimately, if the government decides to, cut back on spending,
yep.
as in this case they have done, everyone is kind of in the same boat. So
yep.
at the moment, you just have to navigate your way through as best you can. But what we do find in a couple of the groups, my wife runs a cooking social group on a Monday, and it's pretty much open to everyone. But what we do find is the new people that come along to that, they often have no concept or understanding of how funding even works.
Yes.
So a big issue, and we found this when we first found that Liam had autism and we were trying to get support, aside from anything else, is the big problem that you have is that it's very difficult to even understand how the system works.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lay the blame at anyone in
particular. No.
But you find, it's, even if you go to, the health services or Focus or anyone, it isn't clear
yes.
As to what you may be entitled to
yeah.
or not entitled
yes.
to. So hopefully by, that's the thing, is by having these groups and sharing and being part of a community organisation, people that have experience, which is now in this case, our family, we can help people who are new to the situation. Because when you find out your child has a disability of any kind, intellectual
yep.
or otherwise,
yep.
or even behavioural troubles, it's all a broad spectrum, is that you kind of want help, and more than that, you want to know if you're doing the right thing. And I guess ultimately that's always the problem that you have, is your child has a unique set of behaviour and characteristics. So it's very difficult to know, am I pushing too hard?
Mm.
Am I letting them have too many things?
Mm-hmm.
Am I, how do I guide them in the way that they need, because their brain isn't working the way that
yes.
ours would.
Yes.
So I guess, yeah. So in terms of funding, it goes across a broad spectrum, and disability is an area which, through my own situation, I guess myself and my wife, we've now got a lot of experience in.
Yeah.
So we try to help people as much as possible
yeah.
that come
and,
to us.
Yeah, and do that well, from my limited observation of seeing you in and around the garden and watching Jane working with the people she works with. So you've kept yourself healthy and pretty vigorous all your life. So what couple of things then? What started you down the journey of health and fitness, we'll call it, exercise, sport, whatever. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so our background is we emigrated from England about 15, 16 years ago now. It doesn't feel that long, but it is.
Yeah.
Originally, I went to a grammar school, which was kind of pretty old school. We learned Latin and
yes, oh, God, I can imagine.
Things that
yeah.
I struggle with desperately,
yeah.
To be honest. So I did okay at school, but not great. So when I got to leaving school, I wasn't in a position to do A-levels. So I'd always played sport, I guess. I brought up in quite a sporty family. So I'd always played football as a kid. And literally, when I say played football, if I wasn't doing my homework, I would be outside kicking a ball against the wall type thing. And people say that, but it's true. For people that grew up in the era that I did is... you didn't have much telly at all to watch. Your parents didn't spend a lot of money on you in the most case, so a ball and a wall was kind of where you ended up. So I got pretty good at football. I played at regional level and I loved it. So holidays, I was in the park. And again, it's a saying, but jumpers for goalposts type thing. Yes. We would literally every day be playing football in the park. Yeah. So I guess I got into that, and I had a brother that also played that was a few years younger, so I always had someone to kick a ball with. And then when I left school, I went to college and I did 2 years of sport management. And it was very basic level, but I guess I had a passion for sports and it seemed a natural progression. And then from there, I just went straight into work. And I went to work at a local gym within a hotel complex as a leisure club assistant in those days. And in those days, you worked in the gym, so you kind of did some very basic fitness testing. And again, in those days, the idea of taking people's body fat measurements was still a thing, but you used calipers. I don't know if you ever remember those.
So I remember
a lot of people
those.
Were never heard of those.
Yeah.
And they were kind of quite uncomfortable to do on the person.
Exactly.
Because with the caliper, it was, I guess to describe it, it's like a big set of plastic scissors where you would almost... excuse the way I describe this, but you kind of grip the fat in certain parts of your body and then you look at the table and it would work out your body fat percentage. So there were no scales that did it, and there was no other monitor. It was calipers. So I would do a lot of fitness assessments and then programs and that sort of thing. And so I worked in that gym, I guess, for a couple of years. And through circumstances, the manager moved on and I kind of moved up as someone else moved up. And within a couple of years, I was a manager just through, I kind of guess,
attrition,
hard work and always putting my hand up and wanting to do better.
Fantastic.
So that was kind of my start off. And then through there, I ended up, again, I wanted to, I guess, improve myself and have a better job. So I moved up to, I started off around London, then I moved up to Leeds and Blackpool. So I went to the north of England, and this was probably, I was aged about, still quite young, 20-ish. I'd never really been much north of London. And for those that have been to England or come from England, the idea of how strong regional accents are kind of quite intimidating. So you move to Leeds and then people talk in this incredible Yorkshire accent and you have no idea. And I've only travelled 200 miles. Yeah. And I have no idea what anyone's saying.
Yeah.
Yorkshire's a fantastic place. And I was up there for 3 or 4 years and Blackpool for a couple of years and then moved back to the south. So I guess I just progressed within the health club environment to bigger health clubs. And then within about 8 or 10 years, I returned back to just outside London in West Sussex. And I became manager of a golf and country club. So that was quite a big step up. So that had... a gym, it had obviously a couple of tennis courts and that sort of thing, had beauty therapy. It also had golf, and then we also had a big barn where we did functions and weddings. So it was a real hub for health and leisure and hospitality. And that was kind of, I guess, the part where you then try to balance up also, when people have busy jobs and busy lives. I think that's where I really found it quite difficult to start finding the time, because I wasn't playing in a sports team anymore. I'd stopped that. I was mainly working out, I guess you would call it, but it was mainly cardiovascular, which is, I guess, bikes or stepping machines in the gym. And I would do some weights as well, but I guess more of a type of a cross-training approach. So just general fitness, that's all I really wanted to do and prevent injuries, because I guess as well you kind of get to your... Well, it can be any age, but for me, it was kind of got to my 30s and I wasn't playing sport, but I still wanted to stay fit and healthy. But you then start finding you've got niggles and aches and pains and you've rolled your ankle and these sorts of things. So you kind of, you know, you're just a bit more wary and you kind of, I guess, you start seeing a bit more of a bigger picture that, that you're aging and, and, you know, the idea of eating and drinking alcohol or fast foods and those sorts of things. I feel like I'd always fairly moderated my behaviour, but I think you get to 30 and you probably think, I really now need to start thinking about this because I might want to have kids and that sort of thing. So I guess that's what I noticed. Sport up until that point had been something which I could always do because I always had time.
Yeah.
Even though I perhaps worked quite long hours. I guess the biggest thing I found of certainly being a parent, but certainly even just before that, is your time vanishes. You know, it really feels like it just goes. And so you think, you know, I've always thought, how difficult is it to find 40 minutes a day to do exercise? And kind of, you know, the argument on one hand, it isn't, it can't be, but it really, really is. It's really, really tough. So I guess that's the thing, is that, that you realise, even from the background I've come from, where I've always done exercise, you know, it's hard for me to find time to do it. So for people that haven't done exercise, either for a long time or ever, then that's really quite frightening and quite a strange experience. So
How do we encourage people, you know, that are out there listening to the program, Rick, and might be in that situation, you know, how do we encourage them to make a start, you know, do something?
I mean, it's. I guess I wrote a couple of things down because I was thinking about it this morning, and really, what it comes down to is, I think you start. I feel like I start afresh every day, and I've gone through months where I've got in, you know, or years where I've got in. You know, I feel quite good with my body and my shape and my weight and my exercise. And I think, but slowly over time, you know, you relax because you're then happy. So you then do a bit less and you find it hard. So I do feel that unless you're incredibly motivated, it quite often your life has peaks and troughs around exercise and your weight. For me, they've always been quite connected. I've always found that I have to start a fresh day each day. And if I have a bad day, my mentality is, I've had a bad day, it's gone.
Yeah.
Let it go, but try and start the next day.
Yeah.
Try not to leave it too long. I think that's the thing. So starting off is always tricky. So you need, in my opinion, you need to find something that you just enjoy. That's the most important thing. So walking, gardening, cross training, it doesn't really matter. So something you enjoy. And for me, I found playing a sport in a team was always helpful because I found I wasn't so much focused on the exercise. I wanted the challenge of playing with other people and
competition.
To a point, winning. I like that, but it kind of drove me. And it's much harder, personally, again, you know, if you said, could you go and run for half an hour? Like, I would be crying within 5 minutes. I don't like that. But give me a football and I could play for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I'll ache the next day and I won't be able to move.
Yeah.
But so you certainly need to find something that you, in my opinion, that you really enjoy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how small it is. It can be the smallest. It can be a minute or 30 seconds. But the main thing, again, I feel is you do it. And then you repeat it, and you just keep repeating it, and you just keep making it slightly longer and longer each time. Because incremental increases will eventually become a huge difference from where you start to where you get to. And it feels like it doesn't because it takes so long, but it really, really does. And the point is, again, is if you fall off the horse on day 2 or 3, it doesn't matter. Just try to start again each day, and don't beat yourself up because if you had a bad day, you've had a bad day.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like that's a good approach. Find something you enjoy, maybe with someone else if you can help it, because anything where you have a tie-in to do it also helps, because I also find on days that I really don't want to do it, I'll find some reason not to.
Yeah.
But it's nonsense. There is no reason. I just, you know, I'm kidding myself. So so I definitely don't like to train after 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I find it just too difficult.
Yes.
You know, so I prefer to do, I've never been an early morning.
Yeah.
Some people can get up and go to the gym. I just, again, I could work in a gym at 6 o'clock, but I couldn't exercise in a gym. So you find your own space. I think you find your own, you know, kind of exercise and just try and make it a routine. Daily routines, for the most part, I just think are far more easy to stick out. Whether it, you know, whatever it is, what you eat or what you drink or what you do, is if you can stick to those things and just build them up slowly, and where possible, find someone else to or group to pair up with, and just keep going. And you will find, you'll look back after 3 or 4 weeks and you'll definitely find you made progress, but you may not feel it as you go along.
Fantastic advice and or suggestions, Rick. Thanks so much. So now let's fast forward, and here you are, and you're had the whole disability thing visited on your family, and you've had to make adjustments. How has that gone? You know, particularly interested in the disability area and exercise. You know, how you've been motivated to get involved in that area, and the spin-offs to the people, you know, who are neurodiverse, and the point that exercise, everybody can move something.
So we've certainly found, I mean, I think when you become a parent, you get caught a little bit between wanting your child to be as active as possible and then feeling that you're pushing them, and that's a normal, I think, situation people find themselves in nowadays, but again, my view is that it's really important for children to be pushed physically as much as possible, to be challenged in that respect, and I think sport kind of does that. So I think, you know, I help out at Carlton Football Club.
Yes.
And football locally for boys and girls has seen incredible growth. They had something like this season 15 to 20 teams. And they're quite small. They started off for a young, five or six players, so the pitch have been managed accordingly. So there are some great things that are kind of going on. And I think as much as possible, you know, if you've got younger children, they're really good. Because if you don't feel comfortable doing something with your own child, that's okay. There are some good groups, and they're supportive and social groups that can help. So they're out there. In terms of disability, it's a little bit trickier. The Special Olympics group in the Wairarapa is incredibly good in that it's very much a group of parents. I guess we're fortunate that we often have children of fairly similar ages. So if you compare to other regions, we're quite a young group. So we've got people within our group who can coach and who can teach and who can support. So there's Marilyn and Sean and there's Bruce. There's loads of guys in there that are all very active and participate. So that's really good. So we already have people that can help in that respect. And I think you'll find when you've got anyone with any level of disability or behavioural issue or whatever, I think there's a couple of things. If they sit and do the same thing all the time, it's just not good for them. So, you know, changing the environment of people is always a great thing to do. Getting them outside, having fun, doing exercise, you know, there's lots and lots of chemical reactions and reasons why you should, but they enjoy it. And even to the point where we have children in our Special Olympics groups that they're almost petrified to go onto the football pitch to do anything. They have now got to a point where, you know, in the right environment and by giving them the ball and making it fun and taking our time, you know, you've got people scoring and they're doing celebrations and knee slides and it's incredible. And they may be non-verbal. So that's the thing. I guess the thing is if you have a disability, you don't need to play sport to any great level. It's good to play sport. So you might only kick the ball 2 or 3 times, but those 2 or 3 kicks to you is incredible. And that's the first step of you being able to perhaps do more or even just to be more sociable, to be amongst people. You know, we have children that can't even come into the sports hall to start with, you know, and it takes weeks, you know, and I don't know why, I don't know them well enough, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We just need to provide the environment that allows them to
make that step.
To make that step through and help their parents, because, again, parenting is tough at the best of times, but when you have a child with a behavioural issue or disability, you just find they don't want to cooperate with you. And normal children, that's kind of difficult, but you can normally find a way through it. but it's behavioural is really hard, and, yeah, and intellectual disability is really hard. So for someone to be able to bring their child and another parent to speak to them, and kind of like it's a hey presto moment. Yeah, they'll actually talk and listen and join in. Not straight away necessarily, but you can get so much from them.
Yeah.
And I always say my son goes to the unit at Wycombe, the special needs unit there, and Amanda, who runs it, and her staff are fantastic. And we go in, you know, every 6 months, and we do a report and a chat. And every time they tell me what he's done, and I'm amazed, because at home he just moans about doing anything. He complains all the time. Lovely kid. But he doesn't want to do anything. Yeah. He's basically hardwired.
That's a pretty familiar story, mate.
To roll his dice and look at his pictures. Yeah. And they say, oh, he's done cooking and he's played hockey and he's done football. And I keep looking. I look at my wife and say,
yeah. Who was this smart man? Yeah.
So, but it's a different type of relationship. But I guess that the thing is understanding something with disabilities as well. Sports are a huge thing. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that are in residential care at certain providers, and I've worked for 3 years as a manager in those, so I really know what I'm talking about, is because of the dynamics of the staffing and the funding in those areas, lots of those people don't get to participate at all, which is a crying shame.
Yeah.
And again, I have a very strong opinion of what this should look like, and I'd keep that to myself for this program, but the point is that, you know, everyone needs to be doing something.
Yes.
We all need to be doing some sort of exercise of some kind, no matter how small. And people with any disability, they're no different. And I tell you, if you can get them doing something, the smiles and the faces and the laughter you'll get is incredible.
Yeah.
Even if it was dancing, it doesn't matter. You know, it's all moving, it's all exercise, and it's getting up and doing something. And just that small thing, I think, can break the small environment that they live in, you know, fire the brain going and make a difference. And then they get some kind of balance in their life.
Yeah.
And I think exercise, it does that. Is that whether you like it or not, is exercise helps you, you know, sleep better without a doubt.
Yes.
You know, it helps your whole ability to function as a person. It improves everything, but it's all part of your kind of your natural body clock and your rhythm and all those things that go together. So, you know, trying to eat a fairly balanced diet and trying to do some exercise and trying to get regular sleep, those three things as you age make a huge difference.
Yes.
But the key thing is, and you look at the statistics, you can start literally at any point and you will see huge gains.
Yes.
So whether you're 60 or 70, it really makes no difference.
Yeah.
Never done anything. The graph that you see for improvement, you know, is up and to the right.
Yeah.
It's colossal. So no one should ever think, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm that far. I mean, we all look at ourselves, I'm sure, and say, I don't really like what I see. I'll be honest, I don't even look in the mirror. I hate looking in the mirror. But that's one of the things is don't worry about that.
Yep.
You just start off and get going, and eventually you will be at a better place than you were.
Yes.
And exercise can help with that.
Rick, that's absolutely incredible. We're getting close to the end of the show. Love your story. Love your attitude. Folks, if you're listening, replay this program after and just tick off a few of the things that Rick has mentioned, particularly about, you know, as we close, making a start. You know, you don't have to do much, and people like Rick are out there proving that every day and working with some of the most difficult people to work with. So, any last thoughts? Got 30 seconds to wrap it all up.
A couple of things. So if you want some information on general health and nutrition, and it's an impartial, there's a person called Rhonda Patrick. She's a doctor in America. She runs, it's a website called Found My Fitness, but she does a lot of stuff on YouTube. It's free, it's incredibly good information, and broken down very simply as well. So nutrition, how the body works, key things for longevity, she's a really good source of information.
Great, well done. Thank you, Rick. So we're going to take off our outro music here, folks, and remember that Arrow FM has a Facebook page, and this program will be recorded on that page. You can just look under Energize Yourself. Remember our byline: everybody can move something, and motion changes emotion. So looking forward to to being back next week, and thanks for listening.